Yes, this all looks nominal.
That's what annoys me. So when I was working as a security and IT engineer, one of my jobs was to check the vulnerabilities that were coming in through Windows itself, through Defender. And it's quite good, you know, system hardening. It will give you a whole list of things. You need a PowerShell script. Loads of fun, right? It's good. Something to do during the day. It's a bit more complex. So you go and do that and you harden it up. But then the next day, there's another 47 problems. And you just think, well, most of these problems are settings. An update's gone in. You've put a new feature in and you've just left it wide open from the beginning. Great. It gives me tasks to do, but it does feel like a never-ending vulnerabilities coming in.
What it is an arms race.
Right.
And in any arms race, first of all, it's a race. It keeps on going. Yeah. And that's kind of the point of it. And I don't think where we're looking at stuff as arms races is productive for anybody at all in the long run, and it will simply destroy and crash the system in one way or another. So like you're saying about putting, you know, creating AI utilities, tools, putting stuff out there without thinking, well, what's going to be the cost for every dollar that you spend on something that has utility? You're going to have to spend at least a dollar, probably, or maybe two, on systems that counteract that work against that, whatever it is that does. Yeah. So is that sort of in your defense budget? Are you building data centers stacked with processors that can spot all the fake shit that you're going to make that? No. Now, people are just putting money into one side of it. So I don't even think there's going to be an arms race, because the defending side will lose hands down immediately.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? We're forced in a way to change our culture, and we're forced to move from arms races to operational security and rethinking what is data, why do you have it, where is it going, what use is it? Is it a threat? Is it an asset? Completely different way of thinking. Why the hell are you opening that PDF in the first? What's the information in that should have been sent to you in a more concise form, maybe, or compartmentalized form, perhaps? Why did that not happen earlier in the chain? That sort of thing, yeah? But, you know, you're going to go to this Zero Trust conference, right?
Yeah.
Zero Trust is in the air. The big question behind Zero Trust, it's trust in what is identity, right?
Yeah.
IP addresses, yeah, okay, cool. But like, you know, identity. So what do you know about the entity that sent you stuff or that you're communicating with?
Right.
What do you really know? You don't know anything. Most of the time you don't know anything. Like me and you and Ed know enough about each other because we've camped in a field together.
That
we are all here in this chat room today and that I'm actually talking to you guys, right? But that assumption is going to disappear, and that is fucking terrifying. Like, even if you're an absolutely stone cold sober realist about the world, that's right. Very worrying,
right? Mm. Yeah, because it can, I mean, we're already seeing that with sort of deaf technology, where people are dying and they are submitting all their data into a machine, and, you know, this box like Alexa in the corner just pretends to be your dead husband or wife and sort of talks to you and then sends you text messages. Mm. And they actually, you know, sound like the person, and they're supposed to help with grieving. I'm not sure they do, because I'd like to see a lot more research in that area. I think it probably prolongs the process more than anything. And it's not really them. It's quite cold, quite dark, really.
So people just grab all the data from a social media profile, train a language model on it, and get it to talk to you like that dead person.
Yeah, through messaging, fake account.
Yeah, it's a grieving tool. But
that's fueling that technology, though, isn't it? Because that's real research money that's going in to help, you know, people who are grieving. That sounds wonderful. But actually, that technology is leaking out. And if you can copy somebody exactly predict and sounding exactly like someone who's died, then you can do that for a CEO or a systems administrator.
Well, that technology is obviously going to happen anyway, right? Regardless. So you've got this use case, which is a sort of grieving tool, and that's used to legitimize it, right? So from a psychotherapeutic point of view, I'd say, Kate would say, I'm sure if she's here, that's not really helping you with grieving. That's avoiding grieving.
I think it's the opposite. And I think it's going to cause like long-term psychological damage.
Maybe it will. Maybe it turns out that that's a very, very bad idea. But it's being pitched at the moment as a way to help people, right? To make them feel better. And it's, in a sense, an emotional painkiller. And the question is, well, first of all, that probably isn't a good idea. It's probably best. Grief is part of life and then you have to get through that, etc.
Yeah.
It's part of living.
It's a privacy issue. I don't know how that...
But the costs, as you're saying, Helen, the costs you then get with that supposed utility, it's hugely, hugely, hugely outweighs, not just for you, but for everybody else too. But in creating that technology, you're creating a huge social menace and a harm. How the hell do you deal with people who make that kind of technology?
Right.
As a government, as a competitor, as a foreign military or whatever, people are doing that. How are you going to stop them?
Or defend against it.
Or defend against it.
Just stop creating the weapons in the first place. We did have a lovely meeting and we put restrictions on and we all agreed. We didn't all agree though, did we? Because not everyone.
Fletchley Park you're talking about.
The world leaders, I think it was there. And they were all like, right, we're not going to do it. But it wasn't all the world leaders. And you always have a country out there.
Damn right it wasn't. And there was a whole bunch of people from Facebook and shit like that, yeah?
Yeah, literally.
AI, World AI Summit. And I think a lot of people who went there think it's a sham. And Carissa Vallis, the Oxford ethicist, she dissed it big time. And I was really pleased to read her doing that because I think it was a sham.
Yes, it is. Unless everybody agrees that a UN and you check it, like the nuclear weapon program, it's stopped a lot of countries from just being able to get hold of things, right? And just build their own bomb. That's good. But a lot of countries do have it. So I feel... didn't quite succeed the way they wanted. North Korea still do tests randomly, you know, and they're meant to be sanctioned from buying any of that material, but they're getting it.
In the Cold War era, and that's why a lot of intelligence people are nostalgic for it, it was quite stable. You know, the MAD configuration was quite stable in the sense that you had SALT, you had strategic arms limitation talks, you had all of this stuff. It's diplomacy meets protocols, meet two guys in a room pointing a gun at each other. And that's sort of manageable. We've moved into a completely different era now.
Right.
So a lot of that kind of global scaffolding, not there anymore. You've got people doing what the fuck they want. They do what the fuck they want. So like NSO Group, you know, digital arms manufacturer, there's no framework there for controlling cyber arms. You've got to deal with that. It's a Wild West. You know, to the extent people are making legislation and stuff that in the consumer space, I don't know how effective that's going to be in other areas. Yeah, you're going to have to face the fact that there's a proliferation of nasty things out there that governments can't control. You don't need anyone else's power to spread technology. That's the reality that people have to face. So you make something, you put it into the world, it replicates infinitely, instantly out of your control.
Yeah,
the same is true of information when we're talking about being in public.
Yeah.
You know, you walk out in the street, that's out in the world, whether you want it to be or not. Mm. And the same is true of your creations, the things that you make. You have an idea and you make something that implements that idea and then you put it into the world. You've universalized it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's, I guess I'm talking from the government's point of view here. Basically, you have to then accept that level of there's going to be an amount of data that you're just not going to be able to see. I think there are some concerns, obviously, from a national security point of view.
And law enforcement. I mean, just like plain old on-the-ground law enforcement.
I mean, even things like domestic cases and they can no longer get access to these chats and things anymore. The police take a phone from someone. Mm. It's encrypted by default. As soon as you turn it on, you don't type the password in, it's all useless.
Yeah, sure. So they had that and they lost that and it's no big deal. It's no big deal,
no,
right?
It's not.
I mean, stuff dark ages before and stuff is dark. You don't know what's going on. You know, that's the nature. Most of the world is shit that you don't know about what's going on, basically. Yeah.
Exactly.
But I think the more interesting question that's coming up is, that's one thing, is access to private communications, for example. The world is going, the technology is making more things out of control like that. Yeah. That's just one example. Yeah. Mm. On a cultural level, more and more things are outside of the control. If you look at it from a governance point of view, so if you want to look at it from the point of view of somebody who wants to be in control, and you have your omniscience and omnipotence and you want to be in control of everything because that's where that thought sort of leads.
Right.
Once you go beyond your remit, beyond the degree to which you need to be in control, you're going to be really disappointed and hurt in the world because so much stuff is going more and more out of control. Mm. And so you need a psychological resilience to that, whether you're an individual or an organization, I think. That's what I'm trying to say.
Mm. I mean, I also think, you know, with a certain level of a lot of crimes and stuff, there's still, you know, ability to follow money. If something is a really serious issue, there is always going to be a way to trace it. And I think you wouldn't expect the government to put a listening device in everyone's living room, so why should you expect it with your private messages? And I think, especially in the last year, as Facebook, they haven't hidden it. If you opened or used the Messenger app within the last year, you would have had a pop-up that said, all of your messages are now end-to-end encrypted, set a password that only you know that will generate this encryption key for you. So anyone using the app will have seen the word encryption and know that they need a password and their chats are encrypted.
My kid's using all sorts of stuff like that and has lessons every day in IT, and you go, what's encryption? And he goes, oh, mum's stuff again.
People becoming aware of what encryption is has changed a huge amount of thought patterns behind privacy and individual data protection and what that means.
Do you think that that's happened, Ed? Do you think that people quite recently have figured out what encryption is?
Yeah, I think... if we look back between today and 5 years ago, I think if you go out on the street and ask people, do you know what encryption is? Can you describe it for me? I think you would find that there is actually, in general society, an increase in the number of people that actually do know what that is.
This is where we cut to that episode we did where we did that, right? And we went around and we asked people.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then we should go and repeat that, right? Let's go see if that's the case. Let's go out on the street again in the same place and say, hey, do you know what encryption is? Maybe we should.
Bloody good idea, Helen. Mm. I like that. Let's do an on the go and get out and do some Vox Pops again.
Mm. That's it.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
I'm seeing predictable phase arrays.
We should maybe look into how AI could possibly help with password control, because surely if you can build up a profile as to how someone works, how someone walks, things like that, and they get locked out, surely the AI can actually do a comparison from CCTV feed, for example, to work out that is that person that's come in, from the way they sit in their chair, from how they're sitting in the desk, comparing it to all the data that they've had before. I know it's a huge amount of data to build up, but that might actually be really good for security professionals.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I mean, yeah, they might break the leg and have an issue.
It's another multi-factor biometric. Do you want to use that in a workplace? Is your workplace secret important enough to collect that amount of data on the people that work for you? I wouldn't want to do anything to encourage that kind of technology in the world. Sounds to me like more dystopian shit. It's
It also depends on, like, as AI becomes more sophisticated, then you're going to get more people trying to hack it and exploit it. The more power you give AI, if someone actually manages to hack it, the more power they've got. Because if you just give AI access to something really minuscule, like analysing a bit of data that's not very sensitive, then there's nothing for them to win. But if it's an entire pattern of how someone's approaching a building, how they look as a person, all of those data points, there's so much to gain from it.
If someone does access it, it's not just a case of they get all the data. They could modify the data and cause a lot of chaos. I mean, China are already doing that, aren't they? They can see if someone's stressed by looking at the pores on their face and then they say hello. And apparently they've got a camera that can do that from fucking space.
Well, it looks like a giant...
Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Johnson. Get on the horn to British intelligence and let them know about this.
That's the problem with dystopian nightmares, isn't it? If you build dystopian nightmares, then when they run amok and go wrong, you're at the mercy of your own weapon. It's interesting to talk about, like, China and shit like that, but in the frame of that, we fought wars against.
Right.
80 years isn't very long in history.
It's not.
To find yourself on the side that sort of, that's cheering that. Are we the bad guys?
No, because we haven't done
We got skulls on our hats. Are we
don't do that here, and I would never expect that.
I honestly think you ought to sit down calmly, take a stress pill and think things over.
The worst part is it's like a hidden enemy, because everyone sees it as, it's almost like a Trojan horse in terms of, like, societal acceptance, because if it starts going wrong and that can't be recognised by human operators anymore, what happens then? You can't just unplug it if it's controlling, like, traffic lights and emergency service controlling and trains.
There's a dependency thing where it turns into a death trap. You're hoisted by your own petard.
We need manual redundancy. We need manual redundancy to deal with it. But if you're swamped with too much data coming in and you don't have enough staff to deal with that, your redundancy is not going to be there for you. Get away from the-
manual redundancy, in my opinion, it's a low ask. What you're really shooting for is human control, but machine in the loop.
Yeah.
Machine in the loop is intelligence amplification. That's the IA bit. Yeah? That's where the machine amplifies the decision-making. But from the point of view of the human, it's the coordinator. The human's the director. Yeah. But if you kind of looking at a system that's kind of that flipped over, which is human in the loop, which is you make everything autonomous and then you put a few people in place that can sort of fix shit when it goes wrong, that doesn't work. That definitely doesn't work. And there's some really good papers on that. So there's one that's about error systems and manual takeover systems always fail, like in the Chernobyl nuclear plant. I think she used Chernobyl as one of her examples. So a really nice bit of research, psychology research. And it just doesn't work when you do that. You can't, unless you've got the human already in the loop, you can't just bring them in incidentally. The whole system just goes wrong when you do that.
I think it's scary and also funny at the same time when you look at things like the Space Odyssey and that HAL 9000 character, and everyone was like, oh, that's hilarious, that'll never happen, and that's just insane.
I can see you're really upset about this.
And now we're thinking, well, hang on a minute, that could actually happen now when he gets locked out of the door. And he was like, no, I had you talking about disconnecting me, so I'm not going to let you in now.
That's the manual redundancy again. You need to be like, that's great, and then pull a lever.
Well, he did, but it was inside the ship. Was his mistake. And Hal kind of outsmarted him, right? He was wait till he got outside the ship, like, so he could press the reset button.
Floating around in space.
Ah, I'm not letting you back in now, yeah? got owned by a bot.
We should never be owned by a bot. But yeah, that is what's happening at the moment, is that it does seem that we're just integrating AI everywhere without actually checking it, testing it.
And just the world's leading.
I know.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
I had a really aggressive conversation the other day online. I followed them through The Cyber Show to see if they had anything interesting to say, and I got an aggressive message going, why have you followed me? And I was just like, okay, but you are online on social media, so...
It's an instrument that's designed for that purpose.
I know. I think you're doing the internet wrong.
That blue sky thing is a weird instrument, but we've got a channel now, haven't we?
Yeah, because you were like, I see you've been posting.
Yeah, I have. Go and look at that after Plausible, basically is server logs. It's interesting, but remember, it's one of the tools in the box.
I just like go around and take pictures. It's not really personal, it's not my real life. It's not my real life. Just stuff that I decide that I want to it makes me look like a fucking alcoholic. That it is me, but I don't give too much away, so I'm really careful.
Yeah, it's guarded.
I think it's quite funny that a lot of people won't be guarded with social media and then they kind of complain when people, there's this stalking culture, and then how did you find that out? And it's like, well, you just posted it on the internet. Wonder why suddenly you can find out everything about someone just from their Facebook profile. Don't trust their own ability to strictly control who can see it and when.
That's true.
I think it's quite a dangerous culture that we're living in now. People just post whatever they think and don't really worry about the whole privacy side of it and just trust the platform to look after their data for them. And we know how good they are at doing that.
There's a difference between being in a public square and being seen in a public square.
Yeah.
Right. So let's just take it back to sort of Dickensian technology. So if you go out in the square, then one of Fagin's lads is going to have your wallet, right? you're in public, and there's being seen in public. Miss Havisham going out in her best gown or something, and people curate that and they manage it according to their vanity and their status and their risk view of the world, their presence in the world, whatever. They manage that. Some people try to be invisible. You know, they try to be in the world, but not in the world.
Yeah.
Greta Garbo. I guess there's so many different personality and psychologies of like how you be in public versus how you just are in public. A lot of the stuff that we're doing with security, it's about people being in public, but not realising that they're in public.
Do you know what? When I was doing the online dating thing, what really got to me is people are like, I don't use my real name. My name's Ben. And I'm like, oh, I am using my real name. And they're like, why? And I'm like, well, because you've only got to download the photo, which the app allows you to do, and then pop that into Google and you've got my fucking name. So it is going to bring up my face. There is public photos out there.
An element of information that you're happy to have out.
I'm going to find my LinkedIn in seconds, which has my full name, and then there's all my research. So if you're anyone who's like a researcher or you're big in your workplace and they've put out a LinkedIn or you've ever been in an event, they're going to find your real name. So actually, I think what surprised people when I spoke to them is that your face now will lead people to who you are. Honestly, if you haven't set those settings out to your actual house, and if you've posted loads on your social media, posting up a fake name doesn't do anything if someone knows what to do. What you need is a fake picture, but then that completely ruins the point of online dating. It's like, you're just like the worst catfisher ever.
I mean, that's why people have professional profiles and stuff, because they're happy with that information being on the internet. I think it's where you get this false sense of security and privacy using apps like Facebook or Instagram, or maybe even like private groups on Facebook, as they call them, which are not so private, because even the private IT group I run has got 160,000 people in it. You can't trust that everything in that group is going to stay in that group.
I don't think you go on YouTube as much as I do. Every dinner time, it's like, we know what you're doing. Swimwear, you might need this.
I mean, is that unnerving still? Or like, I mean, why are you remarking on it? Because, like...
I'm just like, because I didn't control that. So as soon as you give somebody your information and they do something for you...
stuff at the edges that's out of control. Yeah. And the thing is that most of it is stuff at the edges that's out of control. For most people, most of it is stuff that's at the edges that's out of control. It's not on their radar. They've no idea. It's like an iceberg, isn't it? Like, say, 80% versus 20%. 20% of the shit you think you know about has some effect on your security and privacy and whatever. 80% of it's completely invisible, and you probably don't even know it exists.
There's a hilarious policy in Currys, and they still use it now. One of my friends used to work there, and they've got a cabinet at the back, in the back office. And you know they've got those display laptops and iPads out on the tables, which they give a certain allowance to. Obviously, public can touch them and do whatever. They've actually got a sticker on the switch, which plugs all of those devices in, and it says Dirty LAN. But it's an acceptable risk that literally anything could be on that.
Yeah,
but they need the devices there to allow people to test the product before they buy it. So they just allow that's going to happen.
Talking of Currys, I had that really sexist experience that one time, and he tried to explain how a mouse works to me, and I let him do it. And I let him do it for ages. 20-year-old little lad. It's like, oh, babe.
Petty Code 5.
Yes!
The computer for women, yeah.
It felt like that.
Parrot versus phone tip.
Yeah, I put that up,
treacherous pterodactyl.
Can you take a picture of it?
Literally, I have. It's on Blue Sky right now, and I've just put out. If you go...
Oh, shit. Chewed the corner of the screen off.
Oh, fucker. Same thing. So I did hashtag parrots. So there'll be a group of all the people, I've seen it, that post up loads of stuff of their parrots. I've got loads of them follow me as well. Oh, okay. Chris Packham follows me now, so that's great. So he's a bird.
Who's that?
Our national replacement for...
David Attenborough.
Oh. He's the next David Attenborough.
He should be. He used to live in Netley.
Get him on the show. Get him on the show. If he's one of your neighbours, get him on the show, mate.
I've got Chris's email, by the way.
Which Chris? Packham. Well done. Was it on his Blue Sky? Is he just like, contact me?
Oh, it's on his website.
It might help the environment. And I'd like to get his opinion on it. And instead of everyone driving to the shop, having one delivery van go out and do multiple deliveries is actually a much greener way of living. However, if we didn't have the data centers, maybe we'd all be living in a greener world. Is the technology we have today actually better for the environment? Or can we go back to before 1969, yeah, before the moon landing? Let's support that as the epoch label. That's where technology really changed. So if we say, if we live in that previous state right now with all these people on the planet, with no technology, what do you think, as someone who's studied this all their life, would that be better for nature or not? I don't think it will.
The amount of CO2 that's produced making lithium batteries and stuff for these new electric cars.
If we keep going down this crypto road, how much electricity is that using? Are we better off? Is the world greener in the current state we're in with our technology? Yeah. And we need to bring that into not just the like environmental damage physically, but the damage it's doing to the wildlife worldwide, because a lot of that is going into the ocean, and obviously that is coming.
Yeah.
He's an environmentalist and a naturist.
Naturist is taking off your clothes and going to Studland Beach.
A naturalist, that's
a naturalist. Yeah.
He wants to ban fossil fuels.
Well, everybody does, but it's not that easy. But yeah.
If you ban fossil fuels, would you also ban computer technology?
Are you crazy, Montana? Are you crazy?
When we look at things like e-waste and we look at data center costs.
Or production of unnecessary IoT equipment.
Bitcoin miners, cryptocurrency.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, why not just use the fucking bank? I guess if you don't like this technology, where does that line stop? Do we go and get rid of agriculture? Do we get rid of the wheel?
Right. You can't have unnecessary and frivolous technological advancement. So what is unnecessary and frivolous? And who gets to say that? Who gets to say what's unneeded and frivolous? We can already do that basic stuff. Five times over, we can feed the population of the planet and blah, blah.
Whole technological advancement is that's what we're about.
This orgy of overproduction. You don't have to convince people of that anymore. I mean, even the most neophytes and gadgety people now, I'm tired of this waste, I'm tired of this complexity, I'm tired of just too much tech, and it scares me and the stuff that it does. You don't have to work hard on people to get to there now.
No.
The conversation has now turned grown up. It's right. And that's and so what? And so you're unhappy with that. Now what?
What do we do next? So, do you know what? Our Halloween episode actually did quite well, which was surprising.
It did, didn't it?
Yeah.
Threat Locker. Yeah.
Yeah. Go to that event anyway, for at least.
Oh, we should definitely go to that event. We should definitely do that. Yeah, let's do that.
We need lanyards with both sides branded with the Cyber Show logos. And we're also going to have a press pass that we're going to have to wear as well. So we'll end up with two.
So Cyber Show in Florida, but also Cyber Show at Zero Trust Conf.
But at the conference, we have to wear their T-shirts.
Because it's Threat Locker that's doing the event, isn't it? It's going to wear their T-shirts.
On the Wednesday, so they just want some photos, really. I think if you look at the timetable, it's really weird. So on Wednesday, I take it, we'll be starting and we'll be at the conference all day. Wednesday evening, they have that VIP party, which we're filming at. And then on Thursday, we're going to go out and film some Florida shots just for some comedy value, really.
Something to write about and blog about would be good.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we've got to download an app to get our boarding passes from America. We've been told to get our BA flight passes, we've got to download an American app.
You need a disposable phone for that, don't you? If you're taking phones to the States, they should be wiped first.
Well, clearly that app's going to have permissions that says we just get to completely destroy your phone and send it all to the NSA and do a background check on you. There's nothing on there, really. It's just like my mum going, oh, I'll have the kids on Wednesday.
Is this like a social media thing?
I think the Americans do that anyway. You can get text messages and they're obviously not pulling people in and checking their phones.
Are you putting an app on your phone that basically gives your phone permission to let people look at your social media feed?
So they'll scan it and they just get your name and the company, but they don't get anything else.
So Florida and Zero Trust together.
Yeah.
She was like, what should I wear to the VIP event? And I'm like, a vest that says press.
Get one of those ones with the body armour.
Body armour that says press on the front.
I mean, it's Florida.
Assault vest with press written on it. This is what I would normally wear to come to a war zone.
But I am going to do a few jokes. Like, obviously, we're going to film a little bit of the airport when we arrive and stuff. I'm going to go to Walmart so I can film myself buying loads of Jolly Ranchers and American snacks to feel high as fuck on toxins. But also, believe they sell guns straight out of fucking Walmart.
Yeah, they got an ammo section next to the kids' clothes.
We're just going to be like, what? I've never seen anything like that, not even in games, mate. There must be, like, MAGA tours, and you must be able to go down the harbour and there's just loads of people with MAGA hats on ready to go and see Trump's house or whatever. We should just go down and be like, I think we're in the wrong boat queue. Yeah. And we better ask the hotel staff, where do we not go?
Away from the gunfire. Does that mean that there's more to the Zero Trust conference? Is there some academic tracks or demo tracks?
Yeah, we can get into all of those sectors, I think.
They've given us sort of access to go around with a camera.
Yeah, we're hosted media.
How I want to spin that, the threat locker thing, is the absence of decent whitelisting mechanisms in the major operating systems already. And specifically like BSD and Linux, a lot of that stuff should be really easy, and it's not. That's my kind of theory. It's not just that the user land stuff there doesn't exist. And so I want to use that to try and get in some lower level hackers to talk about like why that is. I mean, like, why is like our most basic bread and butter operating systems? But it asks an important question, and that's what we're here to do.
And that's what they liked. They did like being pushed. And that's the world, isn't it? Everyone wants a bit of lighthearted stuff, in a way. You were talking about a Polish hack.
Yeah, that's an interesting subject. And I wondered whether Alicia, with her Polish language skills, might be able to dig a little bit deeper and find something for us that is not on everyone else's screen. There's a train company. They got vendor hacked by the manufacturer of the train to put logic bombs and backdoors and all kinds of shit into their software.
Who designed their trains? What country? China?
No, it's a Polish company. And they like geofenced the maintenance code and everything, so the trains would break in certain places. Ah, it's comical. It's this off the scale Bond villain shit, yeah?
Yeah, the company's called Newag, and they are supposedly a leading Polish manufacturer. Passenger trains, electric and diesel, and all the systems that then go with them. So, yeah, it was a massive hack.
So what happened was that the coders found it.
Mm-hmm.
They had really good disclosure.
Yeah.
Sent it to a whole bunch of agencies in Poland who were on it immediately. This is like a really seriously criminal shit going on. We're going to prosecute this company, blah, blah. But then the train company filed a lawsuit, made it a tantrum of vengeance.
Mm. Well, they got caught out because they found out that the biggest kind of thing about this disclosure, if trains were maintained somewhere else other than the official repair centres, then the systems would flag up fake error codes to make them go back and basically force full service contract. Very similar case that I can think of is there's a company that contracted to McDonald's for all the ice cream machines internationally. Yeah, they had to get a certified engineer to come out and press a couple of buttons, and they get basically paid in their contract for maintaining these machines, and that's where they make all the money.
The trains one, that's not just corporate greed. That's actually a reckless engineering in an infrastructure and public safety field. It's Boeing, but deliberate. They're not going to get away with that.
No. I saw on Hacker News a couple of days ago, they were putting a massive fund together. Loads of people were donating for legal fees. Alicia, I think she's already sent you all of the Polish articles, mostly local newspapers.
That's awesome. So we can put Alicia as Polish reporter on that one.
Yeah. Next thing on my list was about IoT and the dramatic increase in the attack surface because of, I think Gartner, we need to have a lot of data last year, they predicted that 25 billion IoT devices will be connected by the end of this year. So about five for every person. Obviously, then we know about vulnerabilities in IoT devices and that they're already prime targets for attackers. There was the Rai botnet, it's 2016, one of the biggest ones. Default passwords and things like that, so it really doesn't take much power to... I think they automated hacking into... Well, you can't really call it hacking when you type a password in, but I guess it is hacking. They just put in the default passwords, added them to the botnets, and they had a massive international network of, it was the biggest one ever seen, responsible for some of the biggest DDoS attacks.
It's like a kind of environmental hazard, the way I see it. It's kind of like Kepler syndrome in the orbits of satellites. You know, if you blow up a satellite and suddenly it starts taking out other satellites and that starts taking out other satellites, and then you've lost that whole sphere of operations.
Yeah.
It's gone. You can't put things into orbit anymore. You lost that. And I think that this happens with the internet in a couple of ways. One is botnets. What are you going to do to correct botnets? Are you going to go around every single 8 billion people's houses and say, excuse me, I think you've got some dodgy light bulb in your bathroom? That's not going to happen.
Your light bulb's hacking me. I'll be like, what?
But it's an environmental problem now.
Yeah.
The only way to stop it is to stop manufacturing IoT devices and wait for all the ones out there to die.
Yeah, I think it was Ross Anderson that pointed out that IoT devices always suffer from weak security and poor patching, or no patching even, just because of the cheap production from mostly China, and they just churn these things out. Mm. And I think we've now addressed that. Existing devices, which there are many of, have not been addressed, but the UK's Product Security and Telecommunications Infrastructure Act of 22 now actually requires those manufacturers to implement minimum security standards for internet-connected devices. Like, even a light bulb can't use admin or 12345 or something like that.
We looked at that, didn't we? And that will take time to filter in.
Of course, yeah,
anything. They're going to get better. But in a sense, the problem still remains. It's that people are going to find new ways, as they always do, to access and commandeer. And so it's the sheer number of those devices that are out there.
Bigger attack surface, yeah.
A huge attack surface. And the fact that it's unmonitored, IoT devices are things that people put somewhere and forget about.
I mean, this is why I said in that article, my practical advice, the first thing I would say is treat IoT devices like they're already hacked, because they probably are.
Oh, absolutely. If they're inside anywhere in your perimeter, then they're hostile. Treat any web-connected device that you put in your house as hostile.
I saw this meme in this IT group, and it was tech enthusiasts, and it was like everything was wired and smart and connected and everything, and the fridge was singing to you and all sorts of shit like that. And then it was like IT professionals, and then there's a picture of a printer and a gun, and it says, I leave this gun next to the printer in case it makes any strange noises.
If it makes any sudden moves.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's the difference between tech enthusiasts and actual tech professionals, right?
Okay, let's come back to that and maybe see how effective legislation is over a sort of long time period, something that we can look at over months or years.
Yeah, the thing I guess I would say to the decision makers is, if something doesn't need to be connected to the internet or even a network, don't get smart things for the sake of it. Be vigilant about what you're actually plugging in. It seems like really obvious and silly advice, but you know, as we know, all too often that suddenly an entire firm has been ransomwared because someone's plugged in a light bulb.
It's a huge harm on society, but one of the things to look at in more depth is, what are the pressures on manufacturers to put that kind of stuff in? And to some extent, a lot of it kind of happens almost by accident. You buy chipsets that Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and everything built in. It's being forced from the silicon side.
Yeah,
you can't build something these days that's not got it. The cheapest microcontroller has already got all of that shit built in. So somebody says, well, why not use it? We know we've got to put internet on this. More people will buy it. And so it's a tragedy. Put that into everything. You are ruining the world. Yeah.
Yeah. The biggest issues with IoT, but we kind of already discussed this before, and hopefully it will get better. I am hoping with this law, especially from the UK side, Amazon are actually legally blocked from selling IoT devices that have default passwords or transparency or customer notification on their devices. There are actually standards now.
You're listening to The Cyber Show.
Oh, yes, this is a tactical alert broadcast. Due to an unusual occurrence in Central Bureau, we're on citywide attack alert until further notice.
I think the next thing on the list, biggest problem that we've got going on still, is phishing remains one of the most effective methods of cyber attack. Still that layer 8 problem. Verizon's 2023 report, so it was end of year 23, just before last year, phishing was still involved in like more than a third of all data breaches. It's not slowing down, it's getting worse.
That's because the training sucks. It's as simple as that. Like, you know, they're picking stuff that are 10 years out of date. Who uses Dropbox anymore? What year are we in? If you're using that and the hacker's actually using a Microsoft form that looks exactly like it and it brings up the exact box that asks you for your credentials,
yeah,
and you don't want to use that test because it's too difficult and everyone fails it and it makes you look bad, that's not good. And that's what we find happens, is that people will essentially pick the easier things to put their staff through. And I guess it's because they feel bad for the staff as well. But it makes it look like the training's effective, everything's going well.
This goes exactly back to what Andy was saying earlier about convenience. If you have convenient cyber training, something is wrong. If staff aren't moaning of
no pay, no gain.
Exactly. If just skipping through all these videos, like they all say they do.
Right. You need somebody who's minded, like, you know, someone who's done it before would be great. And there are people who've done this before who do work in cybersecurity now. You know, they've been scammers and things. Really good form of pen testing.
I think the biggest point is just that whilst technology can improve as much as it wants, but human vulnerability just stays the same and remains that constant target.
Right.
It's all about the human side of technology.
You still have to click something. And this is what I don't get with phishing, is that you don't actually need to preview or open a PDF before you scan it.
Yeah.
Right? In your blog piece, signature scanning isn't working anymore. That system isn't working at all. So we're already in the world of AI.
Yeah, and I think when AI is involved,
right,
and it can just make new viruses in 5 minutes that don't have signatures, right, then what's the point of antivirus anymore? This is why we need to implement pattern searching.
Most companies are using Windows, company servers and company end users that are potentially in a bit of trouble. I know if you've probably upgraded to Sentinel, it's going to be a lot better than it was before, but there are a lot of people still running hybrid systems using really outdated servers because that's all they have access to. They don't have the money to upgrade. But the technology's moved so quickly with AI that their systems are no longer keeping them secure because they are signature based. We are going to require mass investment into new servers very quickly, and we don't really have the chips right now. So that's another issue as well, of just launching an AI without checking to see if the hardware is in place to deal with that. It's too late. It's out of the box.
Yeah, and I think this is why we're seeing security chips actually on the board now. Independent processing can identify system level access and constantly scanning. There are parts of the system that should never be accessed by an external application.
But not everybody knows to do that, so the computer should be doing it.